Hello, and aren't you glad you're no longer outside the Euros? We're here to go through Group E, featuring Spain, Sweden, Poland, and Slovakia. I'm Rick Sharma.
And I'm David Gibbs.
And we're joined by the relentless Joe Casinelli, as well as special guests Alexandra Johnson and Jordan Lewis Butler. Spain is a team I've kept an eye on for the best part of a decade as I live and work here. There isn't too much appreciation of them in these parts, though, in Barcelona, but it might be different this year. The coach is Luis Enrique, the former Barca boss, and he hasn't picked any Real Madrid players. But there wasn't a very good atmosphere at the Wanda Metropolitano for Spain's draw with Portugal last week in a friendly. Alvaro Morata was booed, he missed a chance and hit the bar, and everyone was criticising their goal problem. But they have another big problem at the moment, and that's COVID. It's almost like it's karma for Luis Enrique only calling up 24 players instead of 26. Joe, can you tell us what's going on at the moment?
Where to start, Rick? I think that the best place to start is probably Sunday, last Sunday, when a sort of 11 p.m. at night, the RFEF, the Spanish FA, released a statement saying that captain Sergio Busquets had tested positive for COVID. This was obviously all after the game with Portugal. They released a statement saying Busquets has tested positive for COVID, and obviously he's in the training camp, so the whole of the training camp, that's all the players, the coaches, the backroom staff, all have to go into isolation. So Spain are in a bit of a mess, I think is the best way to describe it. Their preparation has been completely thrown into disarray. They're playing Lithuania on Tuesday night, which is today as we're recording, and Luis de la Fuente, who is the under-21 coach, is taking charge of the under-21s playing in a full international against Lithuania. It's not ideal preparation for the Euro, as you would say. And they've also called up what they're describing as a parallel bubble of six players now after Kepa was added into that today. I think that the bubble is Kepa, Raul Albiol, Rodrigo Moreno, Carlos Soler, Bryce Mendes of Celta Vigo, and Pablo Fornals of West Ham. They're the six players who've been called up to sort of just be there in case there's any more COVID infections. So it's very complicated for Spain at the minute. I think that they've actually done the right thing in calling up a lot of extra players to be on standby. And apparently after the under-21 game tonight, Luis Enrique is going to watch it and decide who he likes to look on and keep a few of them hanging around. So it's messed up a few summer holiday plans. I'm sure there'll be a few wags who are a bit unhappy that their yacht time in Ibiza might be cut down. However, Spain are at the minute sort of planning for the Euros with two or three separate squads and seeing what happens. Luckily, touch wood, they're all negative thus far. I know quite a few players in the Spain squad have probably had COVID already, which may mean that they can't get it again or wouldn't give a positive test again. I'm not sure how the science behind that works, but you've got to think if Busquets has had it, he's probably been in some quite close contact with the other players, and I think that they are maybe preparing for the worst.
Yeah, the team had a meal on Sunday before Busquets tested positive, and so that caused a lot of worry around that meal. I don't know who he'll be sitting with, maybe his Barcelona teammates.
One of two post-recording clarifications. Spain centre-back Diego Llorente has COVID. It was announced on Tuesday night, and he will be missing the start of the tournament.
Well, there's not too many Barcelona players in the squad, as there, fortunately, I guess, as you could say, on that. While Enrique didn't call up any Real Madrid players, he called up a couple of Barcelona players, but it's not like back in the day where there was the huge Barcelona presence and a huge Madrid presence, these two sort of opposite tables where everyone would sit together. However, Busquets being the captain, you think that maybe he's sat with the more senior players in the squad or even with the coaching staff. So it all kind of depends on what the seating plan was, if there was hugs. You know, the Spanish are a very touchy-feely nation is probably how I would describe them. There's a lot of, you know, now it's fist bumping, but, you know, there's still a lot of handshaking going on. And, you know, even when you meet someone new here in Spain, they'll still try and shake your hand out of force of habit. There's a lot of two kisses given to say hello and goodbye to members of the opposite sex as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that all develops. And, of course, to see how the under-21s get on as well, because maybe some lads might make a name for themselves and, who knows, catch Lucho's eye.
Surely this wouldn't have happened under Sergio Ramos' watch, though, surely, Joe?
Sergio, well, Sergio's already had COVID. He got it very recently, actually. Yeah, I think it was last month, just towards the end of the season, he tested positive for COVID, but he was out injured anyway. Maybe the Lionheart, the captain leader legend, wouldn't have allowed it anywhere near the camp again. He'd have taken it for the lads. But as you say, the interesting thing I think there, Gibbo, is that instead of calling up Ramos to be part of this parallel group, he's called up Raul Albiol instead, who's another sort of seasoned veteran Grizzly defender. However, the difference is Raul Albiol's been fit for most of the season and led Villarreal to Europa League glory. It was fantastic in that final against Man United. And I think it was actually a bit of a surprise that he wasn't included, maybe as a more experienced head, ridiculous 24-man squad when he could name 26. I know that you know, Luis Enrique tried to justify it as only 18, maximum 19 will get playing time anyway, and we don't want people just hanging around. But you'd have thought that someone with his experience would have been a wise head to have in that group. And I'm also very surprised he's not called Nacho up as part of this group either. Nacho Fernandez, who was brilliant for Real Madrid in Ramos's absence, but maybe he's just trolling Madrid at the minute and is just determined not to call any of their players up.
But that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, it's been a big issue in Spain not calling up Madrid players, and I think that's what led to some of the boos for Luis Enrique at the Wanda Metropolitano in that friendly against Portugal. But ultimately, Nacho aside, there's no Real Madrid players, in my opinion, that deserves to go to the Euros that are fit. I mean, Dani Carvajal would be going, I think, if he was fit. Lucas Vazquez probably deserves to go this season if he was fit, but they're not fit. And Ramos has played about three games all year. So although it looks controversial, I think it's a solid decision from Luis Enrique. Nacho's the one name you think, why haven't you put him in the squad? But then the squad as a whole is quite young. He's left out a lot of players with more experience, and he's opted for younger players. And that is an interesting talking point. For example, as I mentioned earlier, Spain have a lot of trouble with goals, and there's a guy called Iago Aspas who's pretty good at scoring goals. And he's got a lot this season in Spain, and he has over the last few years, to be honest. And yet, Spain aren't taking him. Luis Enrique's gone for Alvaro Morata, and Morata has been hit and miss, I think.
Yeah, just I should put a disclaimer in there for any Liverpool fans who might be listening. That is the same Iago Aspas who took that corner against Chelsea. I must confirm he's had something of a... It's actually, that Liverpool thing is maybe... an odd point of his career, because the rest of his career that he spent, you know, with Celta Vigo and to a lesser extent with Seville, it was Sevilla as well, he's actually been very good and scored a lot of goals. So I actually think it's quite an anomaly, the fact that he was, you know, just wasn't very good at Liverpool. And I think that at the time was probably to do with his build and probably didn't have the trust of the manager, and he doesn't have the trust of the Spain manager either by the looks of it. Go back to Nacho, I guess. You could maybe say, well, in the fact that he's picked Cesar Azpilicueta is essentially like picking a different version of Nacho. He's a guy who can play either fullback, he can play centre-back, he can play in a back three. He's got the experience, he's just won a European Cup. So, you know, Luis Enrique's got a long contract as well. He's probably got a thing in the World Cup and even the next Euros as well as this. Spain aren't considered, I'd say, amongst the favourites to win the tournament this time round. But come the World Cup and the next Euros, they will have to... in a performance. It's more of a rebuilding job, and he's got to kind of bring this young squad through. They've got a decent enough defence. I think one of their major problems, goals, yes, but I think the problem might actually come at the other end of the pitch with the guy trying to keep the goals out.
Who should we be looking out for in the under-21s if any of them are caught up?
There was a chap, first of all, Cucurella, who came through the Barcelona Academy. He's now at Getafe, I believe. It was a Spain under 21 captain, a left-sided player, can play left back and left midfield. He's quite versatile. And he's got the sort of the Carlos Puyol frizzy flowing hair. So when he's running at full speed, you certainly watch out for him. And as he's the under 21's captain, you think maybe he's one of the next in line. There's a guy called Javi Puado who scored. There's a guy called Javi Puado who scored twice in the quarterfinals against Croatia. He came off the bench and put Spain through to the semis. Of course, they lost in the semis against Portugal. They were very impressive against Portugal. I don't think they deserved to lose that game. The problem, much like the senior team, was that they just didn't have anyone who could put the ball in the back of the net. They've got a lot of talented youngsters, but it's not like the Spain under 21 team 2 years ago, who you said, he's amazing. You know, Dani Ceballos, Fabian Ruiz, who is now a fixture in the senior squad. Ceballos, who, if it weren't for, you know, maybe a disastrous decision to move to Real Madrid, would probably still be in and around the Spain senior side. You know, players like that, they don't really have in this under 21s, I don't think. So I'd say that the lads with the best chance of getting a call-up would be Cucurella because of his versatility, the fact that he can play left-back, he can play left-wing. He's the under-21 captain, so he's the most experienced player in that squad. And then it all depends on if they were to then say, well, are we going to bring someone from the under-21s through if Sergio Busquets cannot go to the Euro, which, I mean, it would be a bold call to keep Busquets named in the squad and fly him out later on. But then again, he is the most experienced player and the captain. But I wouldn't say there's an immediate standout replacement in the under-21s for Busquets. I think you're looking more internally for that. You know, Rodri of Manchester City would probably be the main beneficiary of Busquets' COVID, I would say. That I think that this might mean that Rodri definitely going to start, whereas I think that last time he was coin tossed between him and Busquets, he was going to be the starter in central midfield.
Someone else who's followed Larroja quite closely is Swedish journalist Alexander Jonsson, who's also lived in Spain for the last few years. And I can't think of a better person to speak to about this, given that Spain faced Sweden in their opening game, and obviously vice versa.
So are you excited, Alex, by this Spain squad? It's quite young, a little bit off the wall from Luis Enrique. Some curious picks in there.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting names in there. What is the thing with Luis Enrique is that you really never know what he's actually going to put out in the end. And he seems to be changing his mind all the time. But there is, well, always with Spain, I think, there's always really interesting players. And again, there is a new generation of really exciting players coming through that can be really fun to watch.
Yeah, Pedri, for me, is one of those. In my opinion, as I've said already on the podcast, he should be starting for Spain at this tournament. I don't know what you think about that.
I wouldn't be against it, to be honest. You have several good players in that position, but you also have several players that haven't really performed on the level that you might expect them to be at. Thiago Alcantara, for example, who's also had loads of injuries. So in that sense, Pedri is a player who's been in better form lately, I would say, and is definitely one of the most exciting players in that squad. But then you have also Pau Torres in the defense. He's very young and very exciting. So there's everyone, and there's also loads of players who didn't even make the squad, if we look into the future, that have a pretty interesting and exciting future as well.
Would you start with Pau Torres at the Euros, and who would you pair with him? Obviously with Sergio Ramos, a big talking point in Spain's defense. Aymeric Laporte has nationalized the Spanish and he had a good debut against Portugal. Or would you chuck Eric Garcia in there? How would you line up at the back?
I mean, it's difficult, and it becomes even more difficult because of the way Luis Enrique has been doing things, where he's been changing around in his starting 11 during the qualifications, during the friendlies, and he's been changing players in the squad, and it's just been rolling around constantly, which makes it even harder for you as someone from the outside to say what you actually would like, because you haven't seen a lot of them play together that much. But I definitely think that Pau Torres is a player that I really enjoy and I really like. And I think he has great qualities. So I would like to see him start. And I would probably put him together with Laporte. You could say, but Laporte just got into this squad. But because of the way Luis Enrique has been doing it, it's a little bit the same situation as it is for most of the other players, because some of them have been out and in. And there's no one really that is that secure about their spot in the team. And obviously, Laporte is a fantastic player as well. So it's difficult to say what he will do. It's also difficult to say what you would like him to do because of those kind of things. But I would like to see those two together. I think that could be quite interesting.
And the big problem for Spain, as we saw the other day against Portugal, they had loads of chances or had loads of the ball, but didn't score any goals. I don't know if you've got any ideas on how to solve this. You've seen a lot of Oyarzabal at Real Sociedad. You know, he's in the squad. Doesn't seem likely he's going to start, but then, you know, tournaments are funny, aren't they? You can start as a reserve, come on in one game, score a goal, and then be like a key player. So I don't know what you do.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the way to actually solve it would be a guy called Iago Aspas, but Luis Enrique decided again to leave him out, which for me is the biggest mystery in Spanish football. But we could get into that another day, because he's obviously not in this squad. I think it's, and that also speaks for, again, with Luis Enrique and with this attack, that you have interesting players there, but you don't really know who's going to be playing. You have Gerard Moreno, who's been incredible in La Liga, and he's a player who scores a lot of goals. Alvaro Morata is probably the player who might be one of the safest players in terms of that he has his spot when it comes to Luis Enrique. But he's also a player that maybe haven't impressed as much as some of the others and haven't been scoring a lot of goals. For me, Mikel Oyarzabal is an incredible football player, very underrated. And I think he is very underrated because of his personality. because he's quite laid back. He's not someone that steals the headlines. He's instead a player who works extremely hard. His position is very different in the national team from in Real Sociedad, because in Real Sociedad, even though he's just 23 years old, he's the leader, he's the captain. His role is very, very different. And that could be interesting to see more of him in the Spanish national team and what kind of responsibility he could actually take there, because I think he could take a lot more than he's currently being given. But I think one of the keys with Oyarzabal is that he works extremely hard. So he does a lot when it comes to Real Sociedad, and a lot of their success is thanks to him, even if it's other players maybe scoring the goals, even though he scores loads as well. He's just a player that gives you so much. So for me, this might also be because I've watched him play so much and Real Sociedad so much, that he, for me, is a player I would, if I had him available in my squad, I would always like to have him on the pitch, because it's just so much that he can contribute with.
Yeah, definitely one to watch. I hope he does get some game time at the Euros. I agree. I think he's got a lot of talent. And that rounds up our Spain coverage. But next, we're moving on to Sweden. So, Alex, I'm going to say something that you might not like, right? I hate Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and I don't want to talk about him. And can we agree that it's a good thing he's not coming to the Euros, and this Sweden squad that was built without him before he decided to make himself available again and then got injured can do something interesting? And they've got lots of other important attacking players.
I absolutely have nothing against you saying that, because I'm not the biggest Zlatan fan myself. And it kind of divides the country a bit, I would say. He's got less people adore him in the way that maybe they did before, But yeah, we don't have to go in much more to that and the Zlatan story. But I think it's, in one way, I think it's really difficult to say if it would be a positive or negative to have him in the Sweden squad. It's not black and white. I think going into Russia, it was really good that he wasn't there. I think going into this tournament, it would have been a very different situation. Also because the coach is the same as in Russia. But I think with Jan Andersson, there is a potential that there could have ended up being something good. The coach that Sweden had in the last Euros in 2016, when Zlatan was still playing, was Erik Hamrén, and he had no say. Basically, Zlatan ran the show, ran the dressing room, everything. That would not have happened with the current coach. So it would be a very different situation, and that would have been interesting to see. Zlatan is obviously a player who plays on an extremely high level that none of the other players really can get up to. Well, maybe I have a few that are closing into it now at the same time as Zlatan is going down with his age and stuff like that. But so I think it's a difficult one, because there's a lot of pros and there's a lot of cons. But as you were in where you're talking about, like, this is a team that is so strong because they are a team. And putting in a player like Zlatan would shake that up. You can look at other national teams as well, like Portugal with Ronaldo or Argentina with Messi. That as soon as you have a player that is so much on such a different level than the rest of the team, it kind of changes the dynamic of the group. And the key for Sweden in Russia was that they were so much a team. Like, I think it was one of the Sweden teams that I've seen with the least quality in individual players, but it was the strongest Sweden team I've ever seen when it comes to the group dynamic. And that's what made them go so far in Russia. Now going into this Euros, I feel like it's very exciting out of Sweden perspective, because you still have that group dynamic. You still have this really close group. They talk about themselves as brothers, that they are a club team rather than a national team because they are so close, all of the players. But on top of that, this time, what you didn't really have in Russia is that you have some players that on an individual level have a very, very high quality and have been performing very highly and on a very high level in their club teams, in big leagues, in big clubs. So I think we, going into this Euro, Sweden are coming to the tournament in a better state than they did in Russia. And Russia was obviously the best World Cup that Sweden has done in over 20 years. So it's a lot of optimism in that way. There's also a lot of more confusion around the team, because so many players have been performing so well that in Russia, it wasn't so much as predicting a starting lineup, because it was never a prediction, because everyone knew what the starting 11 was going to be in each game. That was never a question. But now we're in a different situation, which is also going to be interesting, because we haven't really seen that with this coach, where you have so many players that you want to play them all, but you can't. So it's a quite different situation out of a Swedish perspective in that way.
Well, you just said it's hard to predict, but I'm going to ask you to predict how you think they'll line up front, because like you say, Alexander Isak with Real Sociedad has been fantastic. Kulusevski with Juventus been promising. And there's Jordan Larsen, the son of Henrik Larsen as well, is involved. I don't know what you make of their attack.
Yes, that is the most difficult of the entire lineup is the attack. And listening to Swedish journalists that I know who are currently following the team or are there for the training sessions in Sweden and stuff, they're basically changing their mind every day of who's going to be starting. So there, I think there is one thing that is feels quite certain, and that is that Marcus Berg is going to be starting because he's a big favorite of Janne Andersson. And Janne likes to, he has a few players where it has to go quite a long way for before he takes them away of his starting 11. And he really trusts Marcus Berg. So he's going to be starting. And then the question is it, who is going to be next to him? And their discussion have been, is it going to be Alexander Isak or is it going to be Dejan Kulusevski? Mainly those two, because they are the two most exciting players of this entire team. And I think most Swedes would like both of them starting and would feel like that's the most obvious way to go. You have had Alexander Isak, who's been incredible in Real Sociedad, breaking records and having a season that a 20-year-old shouldn't really be able to do or have in La Liga. And he's probably the biggest talent that Swedish football has seen since Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I have no doubt about that. And for me, this could potentially be the big breakthrough for him, this tournament. Then you have Dejan Kulusevski, who's been really, really good at Juventus and been doing really well there. And he's also been, both of them have been doing really well since they came back to the national team. Alexander Isak first is impressed on everyone on all the training sessions. So Swedish people were going crazy, like, what is it we have here? And then in the last friendly now, Dejan Kulusevski was the one that impressed a lot. So there's been a lot of questions who's actually going to start. But then you also have Quaison, Robin Quaison, who's been really good and done very well in the last friendlies. So now there's like maybe it's actually going to be Marcus Berg and Robin Quaison who starts against Spain. Or maybe it's going to be Marcus Berg and Alexander Isak or Dejan Kulusevski. So it's really, really hard to say. And then, of course, as you mentioned, there is also what we in Sweden would say is a little bit of the joker in the team, which is Henrik Larsson's son, Jordan Larsson, who first probably wouldn't have made a squad had Zlatan Ibrahimovic been in it. But because Zlatan got his injury, it opened up for another forward. And Jordan ended the season in Russia extremely well. So this is a very new situation, say, for Sweden, where you have so many forwards. You have five forwards and all of them, at least four of them, could potentially start. And there's really good arguments for why they should start. And then you have Jordan Larsson, who feels like this kind of player who could be a surprise of the tournament. You know, sometimes if you take in a Sweden perspective, I would go back to the World Cup in 1994. Before the tournament, no one talked about Kenneth Anderson. After the tournament, he was one of the big stars of that campaign. For me, like one player, if he gets any chances, depending on what others do, who could be that kind of player who before the tournament doesn't feel likely to be playing that much, but actually could have a big impact, could be Jordan Larsson. So it is so, so difficult with this attack with Sweden. And personally, for me, the one who obviously should start every single game without question is Alexander Isak. But the thing that we're in a situation where that isn't that obvious that he will be doing after the season he's had and the level he's playing football says quite a lot of the level that Sweden's attack for the moment actually is at.
Yeah, I think from a neutral perspective, Isak and Kulusevski would be an exciting partnership to watch. And there's also Emil Forsberg, who is going to probably play on the left, I assume. Is he still the talisman for Sweden? Is he their sort of key player?
Yeah, for sure. I think you have these exciting young talents like Dejan Kulusevski and Alexander Isak, who maybe are more in the spotlight right now. And that's where everyone is talking about and everything they're doing. But the key player for the Sweden team is Emil Forsberg, without a doubt. It's as easy to say, if he's playing well, then Sweden is playing well, basically. I think going into the tournament in Russia, there was a lot more spotlight on him because you didn't have the Alexander Isak and the Dejan Kulusevski and all that to talk about. And Sweden was, there was no star. It was just like the team is the star. And in that, if you had to single someone out, it was always Emil Forsberg. And I think going into that tournament, it became too much focus on him. So he couldn't really handle it. He didn't reach the level that he normally plays in Russia. So I think going into this tournament, the fact that you have so much focus on elsewhere is actually something that is really positive for him. And now in the last friendlies ahead of the Euros, he's been incredible. And he's been really good at set pieces and training sessions as well. So he's definitely the key player. And then you have those other players that also will be important to play well if Sweden is going to do something important.
So all round, does sound very positive for Sweden. My one worry about them is that in the past, and maybe it's not true anymore, but maybe it is that in the past they can beat teams that are worse than them, but I'm not sure how they fare against the big sides. I mean, they struggled a bit in the Nations League, I think it was, with Spain. I know they drew one game, but Spain won the other one. And who else was in the group? Was it Portugal? I think that's Spain and Portugal. And then, I don't know, what do you think? Can Sweden cope with playing these big teams?
I actually think they can. So, like, typically, if you look at big tournaments, Euros and World Cups, so when Sweden ends up in a group that on paper looks impossible or extremely difficult, that's when they do the best. We've seen them win the group many times in those scenarios. We saw that happening in Russia where Germany got out in the group stage. If we go back even further in the World Cup, one of my best World Cup memories is in 2002, when Sweden had Argentina and England in the same group and Sweden topped the group. And it's just when, on the other hand, when Sweden are in a group where it looks like, okay, we're going to qualify, no problem, we're going to get out of the group, that's where they struggle. That's when they struggle a lot. So I think it's going into a group stage where you are not a favorite, where you're the underdog, is something that suits Sweden really, really well in their mentality and how they go into the matches. And then getting the results out of those matches and getting the draws in matches that maybe on paper they should lose. I think it's actually one of the strengths of Sweden historically. And this team as well, again, it's the same base as the one in Russia, where they've worked a lot with the mentality. And I think in Russia, that was one of the big strengths. It was that it was this unity, but it also were that they were really strong mentally. They have a psychological advisor who I interviewed back in Russia. And they work really hard on those things. And it's a key during every time the Swedish national team get together. They go through different things to work on the mentality, the mind and all of that things. And I think that is a key when you are a team that maybe don't have the same individual qualities and resources as some bigger nations, that if you're going to have a chance when you're a small country, you have to find all the different things more than just the football itself that can help you. And they've been really, really good at that. And that's what made them such a strong unity. And I think that is the more than the individual quality on some of the players or being so solid defensively or anything like that. Sweden's biggest quality and biggest strength is just the unity of the group and how they work hard together. And that in that way, if you're up against a bigger opponent, that doesn't get into your mind in the same way as if you haven't worked on those things, I think.
So, last of all, how far can they go with that mentality and unity? How far can it take them?
It's so difficult to say, you know, everything kind of needs to check. You need to have at least one of the forwards, hopefully Alexander Isak. I think that if you have Alexander Isak getting that breakthrough tournament that I think he could possibly have, that he has a lot of potential to have in this tournament, and you're scoring those goals. If you have Robin Olsen, the goalkeeper, which is so, so important that he has a good tournament. Because again, if you're a small team, you're going to have a lot of, have to defend a lot. To have Victor Lindelöf in the defense, having a great tournament, you need to have Emil Forsberg playing well. And then you need to have the group unity. Because again, when you're such a small country, when you don't have the same quality, top quality as your opponents, all of these things, like you can't just have one or two of them. All of them needs to check. And if they do, then I think Sweden can have an incredible Euro. I don't see them being able to like win it or anything like that. But I can definitely see them getting to a quarterfinal or something like that. I do think my expectations of this team and the potential it has is that they at least have to get out of the group stage, even though it's a difficult group. But yeah, we'll see. They just need to have all of these components. Just need to work out, and it's easier said than done.
And here's that second post-recording clarification. Dejan Kulusevski of Sweden has coronavirus too and is also going to miss the first game against Spain. Let's see what happens.
I feel like England always gets Sweden at some point in a tournament. Any thoughts on that? After talking to Alex, I'm more interested in watching Sweden this time around.
I really like Sweden. I saw them at Euro 2016, Sweden versus Ireland at the Stade de France. Amazing. Again, they're like the Dutch. They have an amazing set of fans who all turn up bright yellow, really bring life and colour to the tournament. They have a British sense of way of they follow as a pack, support the side. I really like Sweden at a tournament. Will they do anything this year? Probably not. I don't think they're strong enough. They haven't got enough. You know, losing Zlatan, I think, was a big loss, even though he is 39.
Well, I think that Zlatan's injury absence helps them incredibly. I think that he's a distraction. He's a great player. He's done a lot throughout his career, but do you really need, you know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic hanging around, especially if he's not going to be starting? Would that be the best thing for team spirit? I mean, it's a younger, sort of newer side that they're bringing through. Alexander Isak, of course, who's been really good for Real Sociedad, who people may know. He's an exciting young forward. If he doesn't score in the first game, would he really need the likes of, you know, someone like Zlatan going to the press and saying, this lion should be in the tide. Get rid of that cub and bring in the lion. You know, something stupid like that. I just don't think that his presence would have helped. And much like, as we will come on to, you know, during all these previews that we're doing, you know, Portugal, dare you say that Cristiano Ronaldo's presence in their team is also a distraction and not best for the squad.
Right, on to Lewandowski. Poland. On to Poland. I joke, but it is just Lewandowski, isn't it? Without him, they'd be hopeless. The defence isn't great. And unlike Poland of the past, they have a more kind of attacking focus under Paulo Sousa. The coach has come in for some criticism. He's had a quite an interesting career, hasn't he? QPR, Swansea, Leicester, and then to Basel and Fiorentina. And this is his first international post with Poland. And one of the reasons he was appointed was to make them a better watch and restore a relationship with Lewandowski, which was failing under Jerzy Braszek.
Yeah, well, I've seen Poland play a couple of times at the last major tournaments. They looked quite good, actually, at Euro 2016, but they had a very ageing squad then. And they were quite unlucky, I think, to go out on penalties against Portugal in the quarterfinals. They knocked Switzerland, the unlovable Switzerland, as they've become to be known, out in the round before that, and they were very good. Obviously, there's a huge reliance on Robert Lewandowski, but I mean, they've got a few good players throughout the team, I would say. You know, they've got a very good goalkeeper in Lukas Fabianski, also Wojciech Szczęsny.
Well, yeah, I think it'll be Szczęsny who starts.
As well, of course. I'm not sure who's going to be there. Yeah, I'm not sure who's going to be the first choice. You know, I would, you know, controversial opinion or maybe not, I would rather have Fabianski in my team than Szczęsny. However, I don't watch that much Serie A. Maybe Szczęsny has been very good, but, you know, Juventus didn't have the best of seasons. And look at the season West Ham have just had by comparison.
You're a secret West Ham fan, Jake, because you were bigging up the Czech Republic as well with their West Ham players.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just, you know, when David Moyes leaves Everton and then manages to take another side to six while they linger in 10th, I think you've got to appreciate that.
I think the Poles are, they've got creativity in midfield in Zielinski, Napoli. The big loss will be Milik. They could probably open a lot of doors. Feed Lewandowski, who will get goals. We talked about him earlier about the amount of goals he got in the Bundesliga. So if I was going to pick him in a fantasy team, I'd probably put him in there. He's a good shout.
I mean, I think that maybe the issue is that Poland are going to have is that sides will essentially set up to stop Lewandowski. And if all their focus is on getting the ball to Lewandowski, wanting him to score the goals, without Milik being there, I think that they're going to struggle. They're really going to struggle to score goals. However, given the way the tournament is set up and given how many, you know, the chances you have of going through as a third place side, they'll probably fancy their chances of just sneaking through this group, I think.
PSX's not bad, you know, to play with Lewandowski up front. And you mentioned Zielinski, Dave. I do like Zielinski. He hasn't really done it for Poland. I feel like he doesn't bring his club game to the international stage. So this is definitely an opportunity for him to try and improve on that front.
They've also got Klitsch of Leeds as well, who's an attacking player. We all know how Leeds have had a very good season. So if he can bring that, what he's brought in the club football in the last 2 years to the Euros, that will provide support for the big man up top.
Well, let's see if things click into place for Poland this summer.
Let's quickly go to Vieri Capretta, who knows a lot about Paulo Sousa from his time at Fiorentina.
I recommend having a look at Paulo Sousa's Poland throughout Euro 2020. First of all, because they've got a lot of talent, in my opinion. And one of the most interesting midfielders, he's had a great season, Zieliński. In Serie A, he's been amazing, so look out for him. But Paulo Sousa, admittedly, hasn't done perhaps as well as one could have imagined after his spell as a coach at Fiorentina in Italy in the past couple of seasons. But we don't forget what he did with the Viola, especially in his first season, his first 6 months, picking up the team left over by Vincenzo Montella the previous season and ending the first round of 19 matches top of the league in Serie A in 2015 with some big wins, for example, a 4-1 victory at the San Siro against Inter. He definitely did very, very well. So the one thing that can be said about that spell is that obviously the second half of the season didn't go as well and Fiorentina came fifth. And that perhaps goes to say that Paulo Sousa perhaps did well in having a sprint at the start of the season with his players running a lot and being physically very sharp, and that perhaps the team had a dip in form in the second half of the season. The reason I'm pointing this out is because this is a very short tournament, as everyone knows, and if Poland do well from the start, they might be a tough one for anyone considering the talent they've got. So look out for Poland and Paulo Sousa.
Right, on to Slovakia. I decided to get in touch with that man, yes, Jordan Lewis Butler again. You may remember him from the segment on North Macedonia, and if you do, you'll be delighted he's back for more. Jordan works for the BBC and has put a lot of research and work into helping compile the guidebook to the tournament that Klinsmann and co will be reading.
So Marek Hamšík came back from China to Gothenburg to get fit for the tournament. And so is it too much to kind of expect big things from him at this point?
Obviously, he played for Napoli for so long and he went to China for sort of one last payday. But they rely on him so much that when he's not there, it's pretty obvious that they aren't the same machine. He kind of keeps everything going. It's almost his presence on the pitch, his brain more than anything. As he's 33 now, the legs are sort of slowing a little bit and maybe he can't quite do what he used to be able to do on such a regular basis. But I think he's such a talisman for the team that, yeah, if he's not there, then they're in real trouble. Basically, they're going to rely on him a lot in this tournament and hopefully he can carry on producing on the big stage, because I think he's played in the last two major tournaments and there's only a handful of players who's still around who have done that. His midfield partner, Kuka as well, who plays for Parma, is another one. So there's a few older statesmen there knocking about, including Hamšík, but yeah, he's so important for the team. So even though he's playing in Sweden, I think that's just literally just to get minutes in the legs before the tournament starts.
I mean, him and the Inter Milan defender Milan Skriniar, is that the best way to say that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly. I think you wrote bang on. Yeah, yeah. Nice. So he won Serie A with Conte's Inter Milan. No longer Conte's Inter Milan. He's the star man in central defence. The problem they've got is that they don't really know who to partner him with. So they've tried a few different partnerships out. None have really kind of panned out. He's head and shoulders above any other defender they've got. Their main issue actually is at left back. Tried a few different players there. No one's really stood out. It's been an issue for them for the last sort of decade or so, to be honest. And it looks like they're going to play a 35-year-old called Hubakan at left back, who's a right-footed natural centre-half. So he played the last Euros there and it looks like he's going to play this Euros as well. So that just tells you everything, really, the fact that they're kind of crowbarring him in at left back. But yeah, Skriniar is the best defender by a mile. And actually, they've obviously got Dubravka from Newcastle, Rodak as well from Fulham, who saved a few penalties in the playoff against Republic of Ireland on the way to the Euros. So they've got a few options in goalkeeper. But yeah, Skriniar, if he's there, he knits everything together. He's a leader. He marshals everything at the back.
Outside of those, who is there anyone in the attacking areas we should look out for? It's not many names I recognise from their squad list.
No, it's a very good question, actually. So there's one lad who might be worth... So when I was writing my chapter on this, I haven't quite finished it yet, to be honest, but we do a front page where it's almost like all your key information's there, so people can just grab it and read it, and it kind of, it's like a crib sheet. There's a segment on there like one to watch or star player. Obviously, you've got Hamsik there as a talisman, as a key player. But there's a young lad called, I think I pronounced this correctly, Thomas Suslov, who's been playing for Groningen in Netherlands. I hadn't really heard too much about him because I don't really follow Dutch football too heavily. But he's been learning a lot off Iron Robin, who's there, who's been teaching him. And he's a left-footed, sort of quite stocky, quite diminutive midfielder who he's learned the kind of Robin chopping on his left
and right. Inside and curl it into the
corner. Yeah, so you can see a little bit of that in his play. He's obviously learning off him. It's not a bad person to have in training, teaching you how to play. But he looks really, really highly rated. And I think he's on a few clubs' radars, Ajax and whatnot. I'm not sure he'll start. I think he'll go with more experienced players in the wide positions and in the attacking midfield. But if he can come off the bench, I think he's quite calm in possession. He seems to be able to play nice through balls and unlock defences. He's got a powerful left foot. Thomas Suslov, I think he could be one to look out for if he gets any minutes on the pitch. I think they're quietly confident about him as well. So, yeah, fingers crossed he can perform if he gets a chance.
All right. And they actually didn't actually have a bad Euro 2016. You know, they drew with England. They got knocked out by Germany. But to me, looking at the group, maybe a bit of a tough ask to ask them to get through this time.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, having researched all the players and the manager, and I think they're the kind of team now, Slovakia, that given the fact that you can now qualify through the Nations League and they're allowing extra teams into these kind of tournaments, they'll be that sort of level of team that kind of continually qualifies. Whether they can kick on again to the next level and become a team that is a serious contender or at least gets to the knockout stages, I'm not quite sure. But they're very experienced. Like I said, they've got a lot of experienced players still in there knocking about. The manager, I think he's done okay. I mean, I don't know if we talked about him yet, but Stefan Tarkovic, he came in for the playoff final against Northern Ireland as an interim. So he's kind of jet-packed into this situation where it was like, do or die. You know, you've got one game to kind of... I don't know whether if he lost, they might not have kept him on. I'm not sure. But they'd sacked the previous manager, who was Happel, who was Czech. I think he'd fallen out with a few players. And the first thing he did was brought back some of the old guard, like Vladimir Vices. And I think Martin Skrtel made himself available out of retirement as well. So obviously I think he was manager of the under-21s and he was the assistant at the Euros the last time round, under Jan Kozak. So he knows the players really well. I think they want to play for him. And he's done a pretty decent job up to now, gathering them round, making Hamsik the key centrepiece in the team, and everyone kind of plays around him. So I think they might not be that team who'll qualify and get out of the group, but we'll see him. I think we'll see him in major tournaments for the next, you know, the next couple of decades at least, if the rules stay the same the way they are now.
I guess they're just looking to then to make it tough for other teams. And looking at their record, they don't score too many. They don't concede too many either. They're just kind of like a quite stubborn team, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think we talked about it before we came on here. I wouldn't be putting too many of this, unless you're a Slovakia fan, I wouldn't be popping their fixtures in the diary as one to watch, because they kind of make it them awkward, hard to break down, try and possibly play on the counter. They don't really have one of the weaknesses, they don't really have a striker who scores any goals. So I think they had a handful of players who finished top scoring qualifying on three. Kind of says everything, really. So it's hard to see where the goals are going to come from. Maybe a set piece, maybe a penalty. But they'll be hard to beat. They'll be hard to break down. Maybe they won't be the most. It's not going to be the most entertaining football. Put it that way.
Slovakia, somewhat similar to Spain, also have a goal problem. They don't have any good strikers. The defense isn't in great shape, as Jordan said. But that old guy at left back, and I mean, I don't think they're getting through. I'm looking at them, and I just don't think they're getting through this group. And they are going to just go out and try and upset all the other teams they come across, which anyone can admire, I think.
Yeah, I think that Slovakia, if there was a prize for the meanest looking first 11 at the Euros, I think Slovakia would be the European champions, because there's a lot of lads who you wouldn't want to bump into a dark alley in that side, aren't there? You know, there's a lot of mean looking machines there. I mean, yeah, as you say, they've got a bit of a goal problem. I think they've got quite a decent back line. And goalkeeper, I mean, Martin Dubravka has been given the number one jersey. Whether he's number one or not remains to be seen. I think that Gibbo probably have an opinion on this, but I mean, Martin Dubravka, I think, has to start for them, given he's played a season at Newcastle. He's played the last few seasons at Newcastle, rather. You know, he had a bit of time out through injury, but every time I've seen Dubravka play, you know, he gets a lot of practice in that Newcastle side, whereas Rodak, who is the probably the main contender to start against him, you know, warmed Fulham's, you know, warmed relegated Fulham's bench for a season. So, I mean, I don't know about, was he any good, Gibbo? Is he?
Yeah, so, I mean, Rodak was the mainstay in the Fulham promotion campaign two seasons ago, getting out of the championships to the Premier League. He's a young keeper. He's been compared to the likes of Peter Cech. He was also in goal for Slovakia during the playoffs. He was in goal against Northern Ireland, made a few good saves in that game. So I think that might just give him the edge, a bit like where we talked about Scotland, where they've got two good goalkeepers and they're not sure who to pick. Rodak might just get the nod because of his performances in the playoffs, just to sort of go, look, here you go, give you a chance. I could be totally wrong, but it could be the Pravka who needs to step up. Or it was a case of Rodak was in goal to push the Pravka to up his performances for the national team.
Well, I mean, that's interesting to say, like, Gibbo, I mean, you know more about him than I do. So, I mean, I'm sure that the Slovakia coaching staff know more about them than either of us. You'd hope so anyway. I mean, I'm interested to see.
It's a good headache to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good headache. It's a headache that, say, you know, England certainly won't have. And it's a headache, I'm sure, that Luis Enrique probably wishes he had in goal for Spain. I'm interested to see how Milan Skriniar gets on at this tournament. I've not really seen too much of him, but he was obviously playing for Inter Milan, who've won the Italian league this season. He's, you know, one of those defenders who always seems to be linked, you know, with a 50 million move to Manchester United whenever any transfer window comes around. So it'd be interesting to see him in a side who you're assuming is going to have to do a lot of defending, and a side who are going to have their backs against the wall. You know, to see him in his, you know, in his element there, it'd be interesting to see if he's up to the task or not. And just looking at their squad, I mean, crying shame that Martin Skrtel is not in there. You know, because he's always good for a slip up, and also would have, you know, complemented the mean looking 11 very well.
But surely the one player when everyone thinks of Slovakia is the Mohawks, Marek Hamšík, who is playing at Gothenburg at the moment. That's a Swedish summer league, so he's going to have games and more match practice in his legs. So he could be their talisman. Don't forget, he scored a great goal against Russia at Euro 2016.
Yeah, Hamsik's one of those players, isn't he? I think was it Napoli's record goal scorer as well before he left, which is quite the achievement for a midfielder. You know, they've got a few decent players. Vladimir Weiss came through the Manchester City Academy. Lobotka, who is at Napoli now, but I think, as Rick said, you know, the problem that they're going to have is sticking the ball in the back of the net. Their three forwards between them have got 12 goals in international football.
Yeah, there's a chance they might play Marek Hamšík as a false nine. That's one of the options to try and solve that problem. And that is that. Five groups down, one to go. Subscribe to the pod if you enjoy it. Rate us on iTunes, as long as you're going to give us a good rating. Share it with your friends, that would be great. At Inside Euros Pod on Twitter and IG. Join the Fantasy League to win a prize. See you next time for the Group of Death.